translation of Srila Prabhupada. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions, and having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifices, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere. Please repeat. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions, and having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifices, they advance toward the supreme eternal atmosphere. Purport Srila Prabhupada. From the foregoing explanation of different types of sacrifice, namely sacrifice of one's possessions, study of the Vedas or philosophical doctrines, and performance of the yoga system, it is found that the common aim of all is to control the senses. Sense gratification is the root cause of material existence. Therefore, unless and until one is situated on a platform apart from sense gratification, there is no chance of being elevated to the eternal platform of full knowledge, full bliss, and full life. This platform is in the eternal atmosphere or Brahman atmosphere. All the above mentioned sacrifices help one to become cleansed of the sinful reactions of material existence. By this advancement in life, not only does one become happy and opulent in this life, but also, at the end, he enters into the eternal kingdom of God, either merging into the impersonal Brahman or associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So, Mukam karoti vachalam phangam laite girim yad kripa tamaham vande sri guru dinatarinam sarve pye te yagya vido yagya shapita kalmasaha yagya shishtam ritam bujo yanti brahma sanatanam. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions, and having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifice, they advance toward the supreme eternal atmosphere. So here's Krishna is summing up the verses that went before, all the different types of sacrifice. That starts on 25. Shall we read those? Yes. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some of them offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. So this is two forms of sacrifice, right? Demigod worship. And some offer in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. If you remember, Prabhupada in the purport said, some either they go to the eternal kingdom of God either by merging into the impersonal Brahman or associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. So there's many yogis like that. They don't have full knowledge, or they're attached to the Brahma Jyoti, and so they offer all their sacrifices with a view to merging into the Brahman. In the Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives that the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, the monists, they have four types of sadhana. One is Haritoshana, and that means they try to please Hari. But they're considering that I'll become merged into Hari, or that Hari is a manifestation of the Brahman, and therefore now I'm becoming devoted to Brahman, but eventually I'll become Brahman. So this is poor fund of knowledge, but by this meditation on Brahman they enter into Brahman by grace of Brahman Krishna. So that is one of the four. The other one is tapasya. Like in the Kumbh Mela, I didn't go, but many tapasvis there. They eat very little. They do many austerities, physical austerities, cut down so many things. So that is one of the ways. And then another way that the Mayavadis try to merge into Brahman is, and this Prakasananda in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, by study of Vedanta. They think that that is the Gyan path, that by studying Vedanta, knowledge, they'll become one with Brahman. And the other one is by karma. So that's Gyan, karma. They think that they should work for the benefit of people, and that people are Brahman. You understand? Just like so many missions in India, they may open hospitals, so on and so forth. So they think that Manusha Seva is the same as worshipping God. Right, isn't it? What is the exact... Yes, so they think that by serving man and is the same as serving Madhava, and Madhava is the same as the Brahman. So that is one of their sadhanas. So you have tapasya, haritoshana, which is like their form of bhakti, and then you have gyan, studying Vedanta, that everything has come from the oneness. You know, the Sarika Bhasya of Shankaracharya, his commentary on Vedanta, they like to read that. And then the other one is karma, like you say. Manusha Seva, Madhava Seva. Manava? Manava Seva, Manusha. Yeah, so they think, so this is like their form of bhakti, their form of tapasya, their form of jnana, and their form of karma. So tapasya also means meditation on Brahman. So of course those are good paths, but they have the wrong interpretation, wrong understanding. They think that the goal of those paths is the monistic Brahman. But of course we understand the goal of karma, jnana, and yoga, and what's the other one? Bhakti, is Krishna. So they have perverted forms of yoga, karma, jnana, and bhakti. But because they're meditating on the Brahman, they may be successful by grace of Krishna, and he will fulfill their desires after all. So, right, so that's... So some worship demigods. And it's interesting, Krishna put those two together, because there is also another Mayavadi type path, and that's Pancha Upashana, right? They worship Ganesh, Surya, Vishnu, Shiva, and... Huh? Do they worship Brahma? Is that one of Pancha Upashana? Huh? No, they worship Durga, they worship Surya, Vishnu, huh? Ganapati, and Shiva. Yeah. So they may worship the demigods thinking, because Pancha Upashana means that the Brahman is manifesting as those deities. So if you worship those deities, you'll enter Brahman. So Krishna has put those together, if you see. And then some, the unadulterated brahmacharis sacrifice the hearing process and senses in the fire of mental control. So that is bhakti, isn't it? Shravanam, by hearing. Bhakti often is called the path of hearing. Some, you know, we've mentioned this before. Chanting is the most important. But unless you hear the Maha Mantra, how are you ever going to chant it? Simple as that. So, and how are you going to do Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, and so on, unless you hear about how to do it? So, but hearing, Shravanam is put first, because it's the most important. Unless you hear about something, how are you going to do it? And the senses in the fire of mental control. That means they take vows, sankalp. Just like a kharaji vrat. You become determined, I'm going to fast today. And even though your senses may be demanding, you, because of your sankalp, determination, you don't waver. So that's mental control. Mind is controlled by intelligence. So with your intelligence, you dominate the mind. I'm not going to eat today. So sankalp means intelligence. And others, the regulated house, sacrifice the object of the senses in the fire of the senses. Yeah, so the householders, they regulate their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They don't just think, now I'm married, I can enjoy unlimitedly eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. This is the Vaishnav householder. Of course, it's interesting to note that most of the followers of Lord Chaitanya were householders. Advaita Acharya, even in the Panchatattva, Advaita Acharya and Srivas Thakur, they were grihasthas. That's very interesting because Narada Muni, he is Srivas Thakur. So in the Panchatattva, he gets married. He's a brahmachari in his other leelas. So he represents the jiva tattva, of course. And it's interesting because we were talking in the Bhagavatam class about how Chitraketu, he took the advice of Angira Muni and Narada Muni. So Narada Muni brought back the son who was poisoned by the co-wives. So that was Narada Muni, but also Srivas Thakur, when during the kirtan, his son died. And also the same thing happened. He brought the son, or Lord Chaitanya brought the son back and gave a very similar discourse. Oh, this relationship is temporary and this and that. So the grihasthas, they understand that. Now I'm married here and there, doing this and that, but it's temporary. But let's make a good combination so that we can advance together. Therefore, it is in the Bhagavatam, it says that the male grihastha, he should look upon his wife as a boat to cross the material ocean. It's directly in the verses of the Bhagavatam. And the wife should look at the body of the husband as also another boat to cross the material ocean, because they can combine. It's also Chanika Pandit says the best friend of a man is his wife, and the best friend of the wife is the husband. Of course, he's speaking ideally. Well, they're the best friend if they combine for spiritual realization. But then they sacrifice overindulgence in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in their grihastha life. Others who are interested in self-realization through control of mind and senses, yeah, this is the yogis now, you see. So Krishna's moving from the Brahman, then. Now he's gone into bhakti, but now it's more into yoga. Others who are interested in self-realization through control of mind and senses offer the function of the senses and the life breath as oblations in the fire of the controlled mind. So, yeah, and there in the purport, the yoga system conceived of by Patanjali. Yeah. So that means they're doing meditation, jhana. But like Prabhupada said at the end of today's purport, it depends what they consider the supreme. Do they consider the Brahman, the monistic energy, supreme, or do they consider the supreme person, Krishna? So they get a result accordingly. And then next one, having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions. So this is more in the karma line, isn't it? A rich man, he may sacrifice, he may build hospitals, so on and so forth, educational institutions. Oh, and this is very similar to what we talked about before, right? Madhava Seva, Mana, Madhava Seva. They may be considering it in that way. Or they may be considering it not in that Mayavadi monistic function, but they may be just thinking, I'm giving back to the world and I'm opening a Sanskrit university for studying the Vedas or something. So there, that's Dravya Yoga, if I remember. Yeah, Dravya Yoga. Yeah. Dravya Yagyas. Tapo Yagya. Severe austerities. We've talked about that, the Mayavadis. But of course, that is not really recommended. Some may want to do it, but if you remember, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, those that torture the material body by severe austerities, they torture the supersoul within. Which is very interesting, isn't it? Because the supersoul is transcendental. But Krishna says they trouble the supersoul by these austerities. So there's an interesting point to contemplate, right? Krishna is affected. At least the supersoul, maybe he deputes that regulation of the material suffering to the supersoul. But and they perform by practicing yoga eightfold, Ashtanga yoga, or by studying the Vedas. Yeah, same again. To advance in knowledge. So they have a Gyan Mishra Bhakti. So this is Karma Mishra Bhakti and Gyan Mishra Bhakti. So they're performing devotional activity, but one is with a stress on karma, performing, giving away in charity, karmic activity. And the other one is Jnana Mishra. They are meditating on the Absolute Truth, but they are interested in the knowledge, not necessarily pure bhakti. Still others, who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing, this is kumbhaka, and so on, into the incoming, and the incoming into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others, if you want to do that, you have to eat very, very little. And Krishna says, others curtailing the eating process offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. So of course, actually, it's interesting to note at this point that in the Haribhakti Vilas, there are Sanatan Goswami, he made the Haribhakti Vilas, Sanatan Goswami, he does mention breathing exercises, Anuloma, where you breathe through one nostril and out the other one. Generally, the rhythm is that you breathe in for a count of four, you hold for 16, and you breathe out for 8. And then you can also keep the breath out as you become more adept for also 8 or even 16, and then breathe in and then breathe out. So that I think it's called Anuloma, is that alternative breathing that is mentioned by Sanatan Goswami in the Haribhakti Vilas prior to performing Bhuta Shuddhi. Bhuta Shuddhi means to purify the living entity. Bhuta, living entity, Shuddhi. Before you chant or you perform some deity worship, to gather the mind into one spot, you can perform breathing exercises because it does steady the mind. So it's not that we reject all these, but they are all actually rooted in bhakti. And the acharyas give the perfect understanding of these practices. And that's what Krishna says here in the all of these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice. And that's very that's today's verse. So also when Nanda Maharaj was going to worship Indra, and Krishna was planning to stop the fire, the yajna, this is one of the things he said to Nanda Maharaj. He said, "Oh, father, is this a traditional sacrifice, or is it performed out of superstition? Is what will the result be? You shouldn't perform sacrifices unless you know the result. Shouldn't be done just out of tradition or suspicion, but it should be done in knowledge." So that's in the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada, when he's explaining that, he explains that point exactly. That just like Krishna says, know the meaning. And in the Sanskrit it says here, yajna vidha, conversant with the purpose of performing sacrifice. You shouldn't just perform these different yajnas, you know, do breathing exercises or give in charity, but you should know the purpose, and you should know that there's going to be a result. Shouldn't be done just because it's something to do. Should be done in knowledge. So the result is they become cleansed of sinful reactions. And you see, Prabhupada says that in the purport, if you remember. The common aim is to, of all these different yajnas, is to control the senses. Sense gratification is the root cause of material existence. Therefore, unless and until one is situated on the platform apart from sense gratification, there's no chance of being elevated to the eternal platform of full knowledge, full bliss, and full life. So that's the real purpose. Because the animals, they don't have this idea of performing yajna. And to perform yajna, you have to use your hard-earned cash, you have to use your time, you have to put effort into it, you have to work at it. That means you have to exert control, self-control. So you're controlling your senses, as Prabhupada says in the purport. And therefore you're learning to elevate yourself above the animal propensity, where animals, you know, if they want to steal something, like the monkeys or an animal or a pig, if they want to eat, they don't think, well, I've eaten enough today. They think, let me eat, let me steal, let me get whatever I can. So they're very much controlled by their senses. But this, by these different yajnas, according to the different inclinations and propensities of the people engaged in, they all have the common theme that you have to control your senses, right? You can't just, run riot like a monkey will, like a monkey would. Just eat until you collapse or something. Like the Romans, there's stories about the Romans. They used to have feasts. I remember when as a schoolboy you heard it also. They used to have big feasts, and then they would go out and vomit, and then come back and eat some more. I don't know what next life was. Maybe they become hogs in Vrindavan. Huh? No. Were you there? Now, surely they wouldn't vomit in the same place. The smell would put you off. Huh? You're from Italy. Maybe your forefathers, I don't know. But no, don't take offense. You're a great Vaishnava. No, but it seems a bit hard to believe that you'd be sitting down and vomiting one side and eating the next. But it's hard to believe that you want to eat after vomiting. Generally, people don't want to eat after vomiting, do they? Anyway, there's a story in the textbooks. But the point is that human being, he learning to control himself, right? And Prabhupada there in the purport, succinctly as ever, he says, so that they can, if you discipline your sense gratification, then you can come to the eternal atmosphere. Because, why? Because then if you discipline the external gross body, then it's easier to fix the mind or the consciousness on the Supreme. And then you get the reciprocation of Krishna by that sacrifice. So in the Gita there, you know that famous verse, everyone knows, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Majaji. So this is the result, isn't it? If you fix the consciousness on the Supreme in a devotional way, then eventually you'll just perform all activities as an offering to Krishna, right? So, and then mam namaskuru, as an offering to Krishna, humbly offered to Krishna. So first you have to control the external senses, the gross body, and then you have to fix the consciousness on the absolute truth. So this is a common theme in all yoga practices. Unless you control yourself, and that's very interesting, because animals, they are very much controlled by them, their own body, in a sense. But human beings, they can be lower than animals, and they can be as, they can be devatas, right? The animals, they may eat and eat and eat, but that's not sinful reaction. They're just living out the fruit of their karma. But a human being, he's creating karma and future results. So there's a difference there. And so an animal, he operates within a certain sphere of behavior. But a human being can become lower than an animal. More, you know, animals generally just kill because they're hungry or something, you know, like a predatory. And once, they don't kill for the fun of it. Maybe some animals that do. Yeah, you know them?
The wolf? Yes, they get into the midst of the sheep, they can get into rage and get you all the flock.
Oh, they kill all the flock.
They can kill hundreds if they get into a certain
mood. Oh, if they get into a certain mood. Yeah. Well, yeah. So they're like human beings in a way. If a human being goes mad, he can do incredibly bad things, right? So maybe in their past life, or I don't know. But I haven't, I never heard that before, but I'll take your word for it. Yeah, but generally, they are very pragmatic about their behavior. They just do things because they need it. But human beings can become like that, become like completely undisciplined and murder and perform mayhem, just like the communist leaders, communist Russia, they say that Stalin killed about 80 million people or something, and Mao Zedong under his tutelage, 100 million Chinese were killed, and then Pol Pot, he killed a third of the country, Cambodia. So human beings can become worse than animals, you know. So this is undisciplined behavior. But there again, if the human being, and generally you don't hear of animals, I don't know if our friend knows of animals that perform austerity. Well, human beings can control the senses, but animals, they go to sleep for 6 months, maybe that's an austerity, I don't know. That's not much of an austerity. If you're a polar bear, they're not being austere when they don't eat for 6 months. But,
Fasting for 6 months.
Fasting,
yeah, but I don't think they're doing it because it's a karaji or anything. Or a brat. But so it seems that humans, they can discipline their senses or even go into terrible wolf-like behavior and go mad. So that is the special thing about the human form of life, that it's meant to learn self-control and control of the consciousness in the service of Krishna. Yeah, and by advancement in this life, not only one become happy and opulent in this life, but also at the end he enters into the eternal kingdom of God. So that's very interesting. Prabhupada is saying there, and Krishna says that in the next verse, he says the same thing. Without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? So it seems Krishna is saying there that human being is meant for this sense control, and then he'll be happy. And that's a fact, isn't it? If people overeat, then they become very sick. If you undereat, you become sick. If you overindulge in so many things. But animals, they seem to be controlled by material nature much more than us. But human beings are given that, what do they call it, wiggle room, you know, your movement, and you can elevate yourself or degrade yourself. So Krishna is making the point here, but the real point is that it is not for just happiness on this planet, but it is for self-realization. But happiness on this planet, happy life or mode of goodness life, helps self-realization. So it's quite clear that human life is meant for sacrifice. And if you remember the beginning of the Bhagavatam, when Parikshit heard he'd been cursed to die by Sringi, yes? Sringi, that you'll die by snake bath in 7 days. He didn't think, oh, let me go and enjoy. I remember as a kid watching movies and somebody, oh, I'm going to die in 6 months, so let's go on holiday and have a good time or something. But Parikshit Maharaj, his thought was now, what is my duty? Right? He didn't think, because he'd spent his whole life as a dharmic kshatriya, performing his duty. Now he wanted to know what his duty at the time of death was, and that was hearing. So of course, I was just listening to a tape of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was saying that Lord Chaitanya, he established three things. And first one was that the supreme worshipable object is Krishna, Prajnanandan Krishna. So, of course, in the Vedas, there's so many objects of sacrifice, like we hear here demigods and so on. But Lord Chaitanya has said the highest point of worship is Krishna, Paramapurusha. That is in the 11th chapter. Arjuna calls Krishna Paramapurusha. And Prabhupada translated that as the supreme personality of Godhead, Paramapurusha. Parama means supreme. Purusha, personality, person. So that is the first one. Then the second one that he established here was that Vrindavan Dham was worshipable and the highest transcendental abode manifest on the earth platform. Of course, you're all devotees, so you all know this, right? You take it as common knowledge. But not especially known, right? Many people may come to the temple and think, oh, this is Krishna, and there's Vishnu, and there's Shiva, and there's Durga, and they're all equal or something. But Lord Chaitanya established Krishna as the highest object of sacrifice, and the sacrifice for worshipping Krishna is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And Vrindavan Dham isn't ultimately a dham. It isn't a holy place. It is a transcendental manifestation. So the dhams, they're expanded out of Vrindavan, the holy places. But Vrindavan isn't a holy place, but it is transcendental place. It is directly the spiritual world. And then the third thing Prabhupada said he came to establish, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, is that, yes, the best mode of worship of Krishna is that taught by the gopis, yes. And then Prabhupada was just saying that the gopis, they weren't big Vedantists, they weren't learned, they weren't tapasvis, they weren't performing all these yajnas and breathing exercises. But their mood of devotion was par excellence. And then Prabhupada gave examples that the gopis, when Krishna used to take the cows, or takes the cows to the forest, they would be worrying about, oh, he'll step on stones and thorns and this will hurt his feet. So they're completely immersed in protecting Krishna and Krishna's welfare. And thereby, Prabhupada goes on to say that they're always hearing and chanting about Krishna, and that that is the best form of worship. So that's our yajna. And this has been established by Lord Chaitanya. The Parama Purusha, the highest object, is not all the demigods, not all the Vishnu incarnations, but Krishna is the supreme. What does the Bhagavatam say? Ete kamsa kala purusham krishnastu bhagavan swayam. That all the other people mentioned before, they are expansions, but Krishna is swayam bhagavan. So the Bhagavatam establishes that, Vedavyas, that Krishna is the apex, the zenith, the top position of transcendence, and that his dharma is entirely transcendental, and the best method of worship is that conceived of by the gopis. And of course, to get the details and to understand, the best thing to study up is the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Ramananda Sambat, the discussion with Lord Chaitanya, and he goes through all the different ways of worshipping, and then he comes to the end of the gopis and he said there's nothing higher than this. And then he goes on actually to say, out of all the gopis, who was the highest? Srimati Radharani, of course. You're all devotees, you know everything. And then he talks about the meeting and separation, Vipralamba Sev, and then Prema Vrichitta. He talks about that the fluctuations within Prema. Like for us, sometimes Radharani, he explains, fears that she feels separation from Krishna in his company, because she thinks Krishna will be going soon and I won't be with him. Which he's right there at that moment. So then eventually Lord Chaitanya puts his hand on the mouth of Ramananda Roy and says, go no further. So that is our yajna, to worship Krishna through Maha Mantra and Lord Chaitanya, of course, and to worship the holy Dham, and to follow in the footsteps of the great devotees of Krishna. That is Raganuga Bhakti. And so Lord Chaitanya is especially glorified as having come to give Raganuga Bhakti. All the other Vishnus and so on, they may be worshipped by Vaidhi, but Lord Chaitanya, it's there in the Vedas, but he brought forward Raganuga Bhakti. So Ragabhut Nuga Bhakti means to follow in the footsteps of the residents. That you perform Vaidhi sadhana, but in the line of Lord Chaitanya, but you are keeping in mind the moods of the residents of Vrindavan. You understand? You're not just performing rules and regulations, but with a view to attaining that, awakening that within yourself, and as that awakens, and it is called Varanadasa. It's in the purports of Nectar of Instruction. The first dasha is Shravanadasa. You hear all the Leela. And then Varanadasa. Varanadasa is the stage of acceptance. After hearing all the different Leelas, you're performing Vaidhi sadhana and you're purified, controlling the senses, then you will become attracted to a particular bhava, mood. So then you should chant in that mood, adopting that mood, and you should study those residents of Vrindavan that perform seva in that rasa, Madhurya ras, Vatsalya, Sakya, Dasya bhav. So then the next stage is Apanadas. Apanadas, that brings you to Bhava Bhakti. So that Varanadas, chanting in a certain mood, adopting that mood, that conception of yourself, and following in the footsteps, that's the higher regions of Raganuga Bhakti. And then after that, Apanadas. Apanadas means when you're actually in bhava, bhava bhakti, and then you're developing swarup siddhi. Because of chanting in that mood, you awaken your own natural swarup. And then that is apanadas, and the next stage is samadhi, where you actually completely. At Apanadas, the remembrance of Krishna may fluctuate, or also Varanadas at the stage of Raganuga. But then Apanadas means you become very fixed, a Shakti, and then Bhava comes, and then the next stage is Prem. So that is the stage of Siddha Bhakta. So that is our process, actually. It should be very carefully understood that we should follow rules and regulations, yes, but then we should be attentive to the awakening of a certain mood of attraction. And then we should chant with a mood of Vipralamba save, that I haven't attained Krishna, in that mood, and that will bring us to Swarup Siddhi, realization of our relationship, manifestation of the spiritual body. And then in the spiritual body, you read about it in the Shastra, these great, the six Goswamis, they're serving Krishna in the spiritual world, even though they may be writing Shastras on this platform. So that is the stages given. You can read that in Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada is quoting Nectar of Instruction. He's quoting Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. It's in the purport to 7 or 8, the text. So that is our form of sense control. That through Vaidhi, we develop attraction, raga, attraction in the mood of the particular charibhav. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have come to make the world dance with charibhav. He's not teaching Shantaras. He's teaching Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. And so that is the special mission of Lord Chaitanya, to give these bhavas, these entrances to this highest position, Krishna and Golok, Vrindavan. So this is no, there's no higher attainment. And of course, Gaur-Kishore Das Babaji, he was asked many times, how can I become Krishna conscious? And he said, you just go to the marketplace. Do you have a few rupees? He said, read. He gave, some people say 3 books, some people say 2 books. Read Prem Bhakti Chandrika. I edited that book, it's a fantastic book, by Narottam Das Thakur. You can get for a few rupees. And then he said, read Prema Varvarta, Jagannanda Pandit. And the other word was Prarthana. Prarthana. Prarthana is by? Huh? Yeah, also by Narottam. So anyway, those 2 books he did say. Prarthana, Prem Bhakti Chandrika. You study those books and you'll know the whole process that was... It's already there in the Vedas, but brought forward by Lord Chaitanya. And that's our yajna. You see, if we just perform Vaidhi, you know, going Mangalati, chanting 16 rounds, following regulative principles,
very strictly, fasting on a Guruji.
You see, the meaning of sacrifice, right, in today's verse, it's like jamming a kettle, you know, the steam will burst the lid off the kettle. But what you have to be doing is performing this sense control with a view to understanding the purpose of sacrifice. Right? That's in today's verse, right? You must know the purpose. Like, that's what Krishna said to Nanda Maharaj. What are you doing worshipping Indra? Why are you worshipping him? Why don't worship Govardhan Hill? Of course, that's another topic. But the point is, we perform Vaidhi Bhakti with a view to developing rag, attraction. And then attraction becomes attachment, and attachment becomes prema. So we perform all these Vaidhi sadhana, but we should understand the purpose. Correct? We should understand the perfected stage. And so, control the external body, and then the mind, place it on the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. And that is service to Gurudev. That is service to become perfected in that way. Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita, Sadhu Sangha Ki.
Yes.
Thank you for your kind attention. Any question? Point of discussion? Yes, go ahead.
When we discussed about austerity,
yes.
We are discussing super soul. We read already, super soul is never affected.
Yes, but Krishna, that's what's interesting. I've often thought about that. That verse in the Gita where Krishna says, those that perform these severe austerities, too severe, not just fasting on a Kodashi, they torture the super soul within. So that's a very interesting point that Krishna makes. They actually trouble the super soul in that way. Maybe from the point of view of Krishna's compassion. But you'd have to ask a great devotee who understands deeply Krishna. If you have an idea, contribute it, yeah?
First, Srila Prabhupada is writing that experiencing happiness and unhappiness is purely transcendental quality of the soul. So, as a little part, smallest part of Krishna, if we experience too much austerity and not really making us happy, but being on the way to find happiness, we cause trouble to Krishna in that small portion.
Yeah, there's that verse there, right? Krishna explaining like that bhakti is joyfully performed. What verse is that? That's right. Pavitram idam uttamam. And the rest? Yeah. So this is the highest knowledge, and it's joyfully. Yeah. Yeah, so it's joyfully performed. Bhakti is joyful. And then there's that song, Kevalananda Kanda. Prabhupada used to always, Lord Chaitanya has given a process that's simply joyful. So a devotee can accept joy because a father likes to see his children happy, right? So Krishna likes to see the devotees in good frame of mind, and he doesn't like to see the devotees miserable. Nobody likes to see, even if you're not the father of somebody, if you see somebody miserable, you feel compassionate. So I think that torturing of the super soul by severe austerities is in that way. It's not that you like Krishna's feeling pain, but it's his heart, his compassion. But there again, you'd have to meditate and ask great devotees on their insight. But obviously, if you're not, if becoming happy makes your father happy, then becoming miserable by performing severe austerities would make your father unhappy, wouldn't it? Right? So in that way we can understand. It would be worth studying that purport, what Prabhupada says, what other acharyas have said on that verse. Maybe we can discuss next week. But it's an important point to, and it does lead to the point that Krishna is not, though Krishna is neutral in one sense, but still he's a person. He's not neutral like a piece of wood or a stone. He has feelings also, right? That's why bhakti works, isn't it? Because we perform manmanabha, madhyadi, we offer everything, book distribution, studying, keeping the temple clean, making a garland, hearing about Bhagavad Gita. We perform that as an offering, madhyaji. So, because Krishna's a person, it touches his heart. Right? Just like mam namaskuru. If somebody is very respectful to you, it touches your heart, does it not? So, if you go in the temple, you can understand life, and you pay your obeisances sincerely to Krishna, that touches his heart. Even though he's the unlimited Supreme Lord, it means his compassion is unlimited also, right? His humility is unlimited. His kindness is unlimited. So we're dealing with an unlimited person, not a kind of principle or equation in the sky. So, if we perform bhakti with that in mind, that we're dealing with a person, then we can enter into rasa, relationship. But if we think Krishna's impersonal, how will we ever get rasa? So we can chant like that. We chant Chaitanya rasa, Namatin Chamani Krishna's Chaitanya rasa vigraha. So the holy name is full of rasa. But if you think that the holy name is some kind of mantra, sound vibration, you know what I mean, like a mechanical thing, then you're not going to get much rasa. But if you chant and associate with Krishna when you're chanting through bhakti, then you'll get some nam ras. Right? Everyone agree? Correct? Yeah. So Krishna gets upset when he sees the suffering. He has compassion. I think that's the understanding. Oh, and wait a minute, I'm just remembering another thing. The devotee understands that about Krishna. Prabhupada says this many places. And so he tries that Krishna is in anxiety about the fallen soul. So the devotee understands that and therefore tries to give everyone the chance to go to the eternal world, relieving Krishna's anxiety. You see the point? So the devotee understands that Krishna wants everyone to go to the spiritual world, and he, but he has to be neutral in the sense that he's God. But then the devotee understands better than that, and he takes all endeavors to bring the living entity to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada talks like that, doesn't he? Makes the point many places. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to ask about, you mentioned about this is service to Gurudev. Chant in a way that we can develop attraction and we can develop our spiritual relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
So I just wanted a little more elaboration on that, because I also heard that chanting is our first service.
Chanting is our first service.
Yeah. And Maharaj always said that chanting our rounds is our first service to Shiva. Chanting our rounds properly is our first service to Shiva. So when sometimes we take service to mean doing some physical service or doing something, but to understand that chanting is our main service in the context that you mentioned.
Go ahead, go on.
So I just wanted to give you a revelation of that.
Yes.
How do we see chanting?
How do we want?
See our chanting as service to Sri Guru?
Well, you're following his instruction, right? Tadvini pratipatena pariprasnena seva upadekshanti te jnanam jnanana stattvadashana. You're following his instruction. So that's service, right? If you go in the restaurant and you say, I want Italy, and the waiter gets it, he's following your instruction, that's serving you, isn't he? So if the guru says chant minimum 16 rounds, you're serving his instruction. So that's, everything is the grace of guru in that sense, because we gain Krishna by the instruction of guru. Guru Krishna Prasadi by Bhakti Lata.
What I meant was that what touched me was, what you meant really was not just chanting in the sense of mechanical chanting.
Yeah.
You meant that service to Guru means that we should chant in a way that we develop a taste, and we chant with rasa, and that we develop our connection with Krishna through that chanting.
Yeah. So therefore, just like we're talking about sacrifice, so Sankirtan Yajna. So chanting is a yajna, it's an offering to Krishna for his pleasure. You see, in the material world, we tend to use everything for our pleasure. So the neophyte in Krishna consciousness may come and think, I'm chanting so that I can feel bliss, you know? But actually we're chanting to please Krishna, right? Then we may feel bliss. Whether we feel bliss or not, we're following the order of Guru and we're trying to please Krishna. In the spirit material world, we're using everything for my benefit. But bhajan means to do everything yagi, as an offering to Krishna. Right? So we chant for Krishna. So before we chant, we can sit down and think, now I'm going to chant for your pleasure, Krishna, as an offering to you. Just like we cook. But if we're cooking and we're thinking, I'm going to enjoy this, many in strict Krishna consciousness, it's not offering, it's not offerable, because you're meditating on the enjoyment. But Mother Yashoda, sometimes she tastes what she's cooking, but she's only thinking, will Krishna like this? She's not thinking, this is tasty. She's thinking, will this be nice for my son? So that's love, isn't it? You want the other person's goodness and happiness. So that is how to get Naam Ras, I've heard. I've not attained it yet. But sometimes you're chanting and you feel very blissful, right? So it is a matter of service. In the material world, we serve ourselves. In bhajan, we're doing everything to serve Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Go ahead.
I seem to remember somewhere in the CC that the camel chanting was like hissing through the teeth.
Who said that?
I read it somewhere.
Hissing. Well, mechanical chanting is better than no chanting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put people off. It's a matter of realization, you know.
What's the actual definition of mechanical chanting?
Well,
is it just chanting without the mind?
Mechanical chanting definition means chanting like a machine. Impersonal chanting, I guess. Right, not thinking that this mantra is Krishna.
You can't really approach him and say,
thinking, for example, you might, well, you don't know the consciousness, if you have mystic insight, you may. But the thing is, like for example, many people may chant and they think, I'm going to overcome sinful reaction, right? So they have a purpose other than pleasing Krishna. So they're using the mantra like a brush. You know, you brush a room. So they think, oh, mantra is something to clean my consciousness. You understand? They don't think of it as a personal, devotional way. They don't think, oh, Krishna's pleased to hear me chanting.
On a technical point, this is a technical, you couldn't actually listen to someone and say, oh, they're mechanically chanting just by hearing.
Well, in one way you can, because if you hear the chanting of an established devotee, you'll find that it touches the heart. Yeah. So the potency is there. Therefore, it's a yogya. Therefore, people leading kirtan should be the more advanced devotees, actually. It shouldn't be neophyte. And sometimes in the temple you hear them, anyone is chanting and it's flat. Nobody wants to, you know, sometimes they can't even sing in tune. But so the more advanced devotees, they should chant, they should lead the kirtan. It should be at least Madhyamadikari. Even in Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Madhyamadikari, the Uttamadikari, they especially the Madhya, shouldn't take part in kirtan performed by materialistic persons. This is in Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because that will ruin his bhava. Right? You know, devotional mood. But you hear a materialist chanting, it kills the mood in your mind, in your consciousness. So therefore, only Madhyamadikaris. It's just like when we're having a fire yogi in the temple, we get some good Brahmin, you know, like Mukunda. He's a good devotee fixed in Siddhanta. But we don't say, hey, you've got a thread, perform the fire yogya, perform the Abhishek. No, you get the advanced devotees to do the Abhishek. So the advanced devotees are the ones who should be leading kirtan, not just everyone. Oh, let everyone have a go, like some kind of democratic idea. No. Neophytes, Kanishtha Adhikari shouldn't really. Kanishtha Adhikari is not a Vaishnava, so he cannot evoke Krishna. You want the kirtan leader to evoke Krishna. And then you'll find that the kirtan is sweet and dancing, even if it's not particularly in tune. Right? Just like sometimes you hear these Bhagavat Saptas, you know, the speakers blaring downtown. Do you feel blissful? No, you get a headache. Isn't it? You think, oh my God. But then sometimes you hear a nice kirtan, it touches the heart. So there's an art to it. Meaning of sacrifice. So the Madhyamadikari is distinguished from the Kanishtadikari. The Kanishtadikari has no knowledge, no Siddhanta. He doesn't understand. about the soul, the body, Krishna, material energy, spiritual energy. He doesn't understand what perfection is. So he comes to Krishna in that way. Oh, I'm chanting, now Krishna, you must help me in my business. You shouldn't hear that kind of thing. Like just if I sat here and I gave a class and I said, well, you know, if you want to be successful in business, chant Hare Krishna. If you're sick, chant Hare Krishna, you'll get better. Then you'd all think, what kind of a class is this? It's giving me a headache. Maybe you think that anyway. But what I mean, so it should be people who are established in Bhakti Siddhanta that lead kirtan. And they can evoke Krishna in the name. But materialistic people, they can't evoke Krishna in the name, in the chanting. Therefore, sadhu sanga, sarva shastra hoy lavamaya. So from the sadhu, you get the seed of devotion. And what does that mean? You're doing chanting for Krishna. You're becoming a devotee for the benefit of Krishna. The neophyte condition, you might be motivated, oh, I want to get away from misery. Huh? I want to get away from the material world. That is not bhakti per se. It's a good starting platform. What does Krishna say? Samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim lamate param. You should come to Brahma-bhuta prasanatma. Bhakti starts at platform of liberation. And you become liberated by Sambandha Gyan. Read Jiva Dharma. You become liberated by chapter 15. Bhaktivinoda explains all this. Very important book, Jiva Dharma. Prabhupada said it, I tell it 100 times. Read Jiva Dharma. It's one book. Everything in bhakti process is there. In one methodical thing. That's why Prabhupada recommended it. And all these points are there. But that's the main point. The bhakti and all the shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam are done for Krishna's pleasure. Whereas the materialistic approach is, it's done for my pleasure. I want bliss. I want to chant Hare Krishna so that I feel high. Right, in the hippie days, they used to have like a card, stay high forever, chant Hare Krishna. You've seen those. So that may catch people, yeah. Like it says, we have in the temple there, it says chant and be happy at the Maha Mantra, but actually our philosophy is chant and suffer in the mood of separation. That's actually Lord Chaitanya's. Feel miserable that you haven't attained Krishna when you're chanting. Because our process is Rupa Raghunath. And Raghunath, you know, Vilap Kusmanjali, have you read? Of Raghunath Das Babaji? It's all about, I'm trying to attain the service of Srimati Radharani. I'll wash her bathroom with my hair. It's all hankering for service. So actually we chant like that. I haven't attained Krishna. That is transcendent. That is Rupa Raghunath. It's called the Antapanta, the internal path. So like I was saying, you have to perform bhakti internally. And the mood is Vipralamba Seva Bhav. Right, Nayanam Gladys Rud Haraya Vadanam Radaya Gira Pulakanitam Pabukada Tavama. Right? O Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm feeling like a moment is a yuga. So that is, that's what attracts Krishna. You're yearning for Him. But if you're thinking, oh, I've attained the holy name, I'm feeling bliss, then Krishna may walk by and you might think, oh, who's that? Don't interrupt my chanting. I'm Krishna. No, 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 I'm chanting for my own pleasure. Please, see Radharani. No, we feel chanting should be done like that. I haven't attained to Krishna. That's particularly the internal cultivation. I haven't. Like if you think I'm a great musician, you'll stop practicing. But if you think I'm learning to play the guitar, then you'll keep practicing. So the mood of bhakti given by Lord Chaitanya is that Vipralamba Seva Bhava. And it's there in Srinivasacharya, right? Hey Nanda Suno, right? What is that long? Hey Rade Brajadeva Kay, hey Nanda Suno Kara. Where are you? On the bank of the Jamuna? Are you at Govardhan? They're the six Goswamis. They're Manjari. They're not even Jiva Shakti. But they are exemplifying that mood of I haven't attained Krishna. You see? If we think, oh, I know 100 slokas, or even 5 slokas, therefore I know Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is unlimited. So how can you ever say you've attained Krishna? And that's in the Ramananda Samvat, right? Lord Chaitanya puts his hand on the mouth of Ramananda. Go no further, it's too much. So there's, and it's all about separation. Srimati Radharani, she's directly Swarup Shakti, and in the presence of Krishna, she's feeling the danger of separation. Huh? So that is the feeling, right? In Golok, if you read Govinda Leelamrita, you'll see that all the Leela revolves around the meeting and separation of Radha and Krishna. Krishna goes in the morning to the forest. Everyone feels separation. Radharani is planning, how can I meet Krishna? So that is Bhakti Marg, actually, in the line of Mahaprabhu. Vipralamba Seva Bhava. You read all about this in Jiva Dharma. It's very important to understand. Then you can cultivate these things internally. If you think, I know Krishna, I've attained Krishna. Just like Narottam says, you can't buy a ticket to Vrindavan, right? What is Vrindavan? It's the forest of devotion. You can't buy a ticket and then enter Golok. No, the ticket is the mercy of Krishna, Vipralamba, the desire. What's that? What's that song? Sharanagati. Kabe habi bolo se dinama aparada kuchi sudanama ruchi. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what a Parama Vaishnava. When will I chant the holy name? My offense is ceasing and I'm getting a little taste. When will that day come? I think the song's called Siddha Alasa. Right? Hankering. So that's our mood. We haven't attained Krishna. We haven't pleased Krishna. And that's, if you read Govinda Leelamrita, Krishna Bhavanamrita, Krishna book, they're not thinking, oh Krishna, I've got Krishna, they're thinking. Even in the Rasa dance, what did Krishna do? He disappeared, right? And then he even disappeared from Srimati Radharani. And then when he came back, he explained, I disappeared, increased to bring you, to increase your devotion. Right? Before you're married, you think, oh, she's the most wonderful girl in the world. Then after marriage, when she's locked down in the house, you think, God, she's giving me a headache. I'm going out with my friends. Sorry about that, ladies. Didn't mean it. But you understand? So once you've got something, you think, when you haven't got something, you desire, you know, it pulls your emotion. So that's that's our sacrifice. Complaint about, anyway, go on.
Thank you very much for the nice class. My question is, you said that according to Jiva Dharma, one should not hear the kirtan from not experienced group. So my question
it's Bhakti Vinod says that.
My question, is it applied for everybody or for Kanishtha Adhikari?
Well, for example, somebody, a Kanishtha Adhikari, or somebody doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, it may be good for him to hear the Hare Krishna mantra in a Bollywood movie, right? Or to watch a play about Krishna on the television, right? Because at his position, that's good, learning about Krishna. But for example, Rupa, you know, there used to be that Mahabharata, I think it was 26, it was on the television, Mahabharata. So you wouldn't get Rupa Goswami watching the television every Sunday, you know, you understand, because he may find this bhava is not correct. But for the common mass of people, that may be good, because it's teaching them the story of Krishna, even though there's some faults in there. But an advanced devotee may say, this is not being correctly portrayed, this is not what Vedavyas said. You understand? But for the common mass of people, I mean, it was very popular in India, right? Everyone was watching it. But somebody who's an Uttama Adhikari, advanced devotee, he's advised to study in accordance with his level. You understand? Just like, for example, say you're a great musician, right? And you're listening to some people play music very inexpertly. Right, it give you a headache. Right, say you have a good sense of pitch, and you hear people chanting out of tune, out of rhythm. They give you a headache. Right, but then some people, they may think, "Oh, it's a really nice kirtan." You understand? Because they're not so musically developed as yourself. Don't you? Do you see the point?
I was thinking that devotee of Uttama Adhikari, he is not distinguished about who is singing. He just hears.
Well, where did you hear that the Uttama Adhikari doesn't distinguish? The Uttama Adhikari doesn't distinguish. He sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna, demons or devotee. He sees them all, but he's well aware of the different types of people and devotion. But he doesn't have to avoid, like the Madhyama Adhikari, he shouldn't associate with non-devotee. Asat Sangi Chayaga E Vaishnavachara. So the advanced devotee, it doesn't, like Srila Prabhupada, he went by himself to New York, right? And he was wandering around New York for the first year without any followers or, you know, was still fixed in Krishna. But if you do that, I mean, maybe you are Uttama Adhikari, I don't know. But if you go to, say, to a place where there's no Krishna consciousness, no devotees, you know, that will bring you down, will it not? By association. So the point is, I guess, it's association that's important for the Madhyama Adhikari. But if you're a Kanishtha Adhikari, then any association will bring you up. But if you're a Madhyamadikari and you know the philosophy nicely and you're quite realized, and you hear people making mistakes in the philosophy, that will give you a bit of a headache, isn't it? You experience that yourself? You hear. But it may be good for a Kanishthadikari to hear about Krishna, even though it's inexpertly, Krishna's inexpertly presented. Right? So it's like that. Just like if you're a good musician, you want to play with other good musicians. But if you're a poor musician, it doesn't matter who you practice with. But it's better if you practice with a good musician. But if nobody's in tune, it doesn't matter if you're in tune or not. You're just banging away. But it's all practice. But you should, therefore it's in the Shastra, you should strive for the association of more advanced devotees, because they can inspire you and guide you. Right? Like Tchaikovsky, he wasn't going to the local piano teacher in the local village hall. You know? Or Beethoven. They're listening, they're on a higher level.
My question is, because my mind is very prone to criticizing or fault picking. So how can a mind like this actually judge whether something is, if I actually introspect, I mean, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, how can I find fault when I'm honeycombed with faults?
Yeah.
So when I see, when I introspect, suddenly I don't find myself qualified to judge anybody as to whether this is a Kanishtha something or whether this is a Madhyama something. I get become very offensive. So I just want to know about it. I mean, when you hear somebody singing, I surely from my side.
No, well, I mean, you appreciate everyone, but I'm just repeating what Bhakti Vinod says in Jiva Dharma. Says that he says particularly not neophyte devotees, but he says materialistic devotees, like people performing yajnas because they want to become rich. Devotee doesn't want to sit with such people. This is a bad mood, right? You can feel the materialistic mood. But if you sit with devotees in bhava bhakti, that will reflect in your heart. But you just quoted Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he was Prabhupada, he was saying, how can I find fault? Because I'm honeycombed with fault myself. So if we meditate in that way, we'll lose our propensity to find fault. But then also in the Uddhava Gita, at the end of, I think it's chapter 35, Krishna tells Uddhava, verse 30, I think, he tells Uddhava, he said, if you meditate upon all living entities, that Krishna is present in the heart of all living entities, then you lose the propensity to find fault in an envious way. And Krishna is present in two ways in the heart of all living entities. One is the Jiva Shakti. The Jiva Shakti is Krishna. And Krishna is present as Paramatma. So Madhyamadikari means he sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. So if you want to worship Krishna, how you can worship Krishna, I'm not saying this is your position, worship Krishna, but I don't like this person. I love Krishna, but I hate people from Bengal because I'm from Orissa. Then this is Prakriti Bhakta at best. You understand? But if you think, I love Krishna, then you must love the energy of Krishna. So the Vaishnav, he has reverence for the material energy. Right? Vaishnav isn't supposed to kick things, right? If you want to close the door, you don't kick it closed, you push it closed, right? Vaishnav doesn't use his foot except. So the Vaishnav has reverence for all living entities. And that is a Vaishnav. But the materialist, he thinks in this duality, oh, my friend, my enemy. I like this person, I don't like this. In the material world, people define themselves by their enemies. Right? I'm a supporter of this football team, and that football team on the other side of town, we hate them. Right? Right in the days of the Cold War. We're Americans. We hate the Russians. We are Russians. We hate the Americans. This makes us strong. So the demoniac, they become empowered by their envy. You understand? When they become angry, they feel, oh, I like being angry, because then I feel some shakti. So they enjoy their hatred, you know. Oh, I hate that football team. My football team is perfect, even though they're bottom of the league. So the materialist, he lives in this world of duality, good and bad, friends and enemies. But the Vaishnav, he sees everything as the energy and the soul of Krishna.